Didi, thanks for joining us. It's good to have you as a guest on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. To start out, can you give us a sense of what this case is about, both in a concrete sense and at the level of constitutional principles and jurisprudence?
Well, I think that public access was made to be a public forum because when the cable companies provide their own franchise systems and networks and different ways of selling commercial television, they also have an obligation to have the local people be able to use the channels. That was always my idea of what public access is. Because in order to get to your TV set, they have to go through the city infrastructure, and that is sort of like a quid pro quo. The city opens up their manholes or their telephone poles and allows the cable company to make use of it to make their money, and in exchange they give a percentage of their profits to support community media. And that to me is a really good thing. And actually, for many years, Manhattan didn't have any studio or any infrastructure for communities. They did have a couple of channels which you had to rent a commercial studio to put your programs on. And when I first started working with Paper Tiger TV, we had to pay for each piece of equipment that we used at this commercial TV entity called Metro Access, but it was a profit-making business. And so we saw that around the country people had public access stations. So we testified in the city council and we marched and had demonstrations to say that there should be a way that local people in Manhattan could have a real studio. And so part of my own interest in MNN is the kind of proprietary thing, because it was through Paper Tiger and Fairness and Accuracy in Media and the United Church of Christ Communications Office. We actually were the people that enabled the city to get their acts together and get public access. And nowadays that has grown to be $11 million a year they get. And there was a very nice program of providing community media grants. Each year about $300,000 would be divvied out in smaller grants to community organizations. And it had a very positive purpose in the sense that it got local people and community groups the wherewithal and the training and the access to equipment to make their programs. And what alarmed me after working so hard to get the station started was the fact that they had these community media grants and they cut them out. At the same time, they raised the salary of the manager and the director so that now he's making $430,000 a year, which is way off the scale in terms of what a public access director usually makes. So we wanted to get the community media grants reinstated. So we went to a board meeting, and we were told that we couldn't go to the board meeting, that they were private. And so Papaletto and I went out and tried to go to the opening of the Firehouse, which is their satellite studio, and we just made a tape sitting outside. And because of the tape, they said we were banned. But they were really banning us because they didn't want us to go to the board meeting. It had really very little to do with the tape. And it really was tragic because Papaletto was doing so well there, and he loved working. He was so excited to have a studio in his neighborhood. He lived down the street, and he had all kinds of plans to do talent shows and poetry readings, and he couldn't have access. And I felt terrible that we had caused him to be banned and myself to be banned. So we said, this is not the way public access should be. It should be free speech. And so we sued, and we won, actually, in the U.S. Circuit Court. And we were really happy. We were thinking that we would settle, and we'd settle to reinstate the community media grants and think about doing series of programs. And we were really happy. And then they appealed. MNN appealed, saying that they were private, that public access didn't have to be a public forum. They did not want to admit that they were wrong, basically.
So it sounds like part of what's at stake in this case is the question of whether a private community media organization that receives public funds is obliged to provide First Amendment rights to people who are interested in using their facilities.
Yeah, that it's really the whole raison d'etre of having a public channel is to give people a forum. And how are you going to manage the forum? And obviously you do what's they and it's in the New York State Public Service Commission regulations, it has to be first come, first serve, which means you can't really turn anything down. You can program different things at different times of the days or night, and you can put children's programming in the afternoon and stuff that may be sexual or whatever and content later on at night. But you can't. You have to run everything, and that was not the case in terms of how they treated our video. I mean, they said it was threatening. The video is not threatening at all. What they were threatened by was our attempt to bring up issues to the board. And the thing is, the bylaws say that they have to do that. The bylaws and their handbook. Their handbook says that they exist to enable residents of Manhattan to exercise their First Amendment rights. That's what it says. So they're such hypocrites that they would actually deny that when legally it says that in their bylaws as an organization.